The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Thursday, everyone. I'm sitting here frantically trying to get some last-minute technical adjustments made. I think I got it going so that we are today streaming on Twitch and Twitter, as well as, you know, the usual suspects. And yes, we are still, it's going now. Hi. We are still on YouTube. So here's the thing. I got this copyright strike yesterday on something that I don't know. I have no idea what it is, because the RIAA, Recording Industry Association of America, I believe is what the RIAA stands for, flagged a video, a show of mine from May of 2013. And I couldn't tell you what it was, because they took the video down, and they don't bother to tell you what the offending content was that prompted the copyright strike. So it's a broken system. It's one reason why I talk about it so much, because it's kind of foobar. Hold on. Did I not? I need to make sure. Oh, I did start YouTube. Okay. So YouTube, we're still on YouTube. So thank goodness. Now let's keep our fingers crossed that one of these bots or a human being doesn't go through my videos from 10 years ago and find something that, you know, 20 seconds of a song that I shouldn't have played and violate me again, because then I'll get suspended from streaming. And if I get two more, then they kill the channel. But you know what? I'm like, I guess, a cat. I suppose I have nine lives or something. So anyway, today's Thursday. Howie Klein is here. So much going on. There's a lot to talk about. But, oh my goodness, it is busy. Let me tell you what is happening at the Capitol now. You know, think back to January 6th for a moment. On January 6th, we had easily hundreds of radical right-wingers storm the Capitol, participate in an insurrection, try to overturn the results of a fair and free election. And now, I mean, after the fact, there have been over 400 arrests so far, with many more expected. But that day, did you see anyone get arrested? Did you see any Capitol police take out the zip ties and arrest anybody? You didn't, because they didn't. But let me tell you what's happening today. A group of Congress members, I believe all black women, were just arrested. For what, you ask? Well, for the crime of protesting. Here, I'll show you a couple of pictures. At least I can do that. So this is, if you're watching on one of the video streams, this is what I'm showing you. But I'll tell you, for those who are listening to audio, because it's radio first, this is Congresswoman Joyce Beatty with her and a Capitol police officer carrying those zip tie handcuffs. And Joyce Beatty's hands are behind her back in those zip tie cuffs. This is a tweet from April Ryan, who says, Congressional Black Caucus chair at Rep. Beatty arrested for protesting on the Hill for voting rights, along with nine other black women. Yeah, you know what they did that was so horrible? Hold on, there's video, if I can find it again. I just had it here, but Twitter moves quickly. And this I just found, you know, 5 minutes ago. All right, so here, let me pull up this one. This is from an NBC News reporter, Hallie Talbot, and it's just 5 seconds worth of video. But you see them, I believe they're inside, like in the a courtyard inside the Hart Senate office building. Just a group of nine women chanting, free the vote, free the vote. They were chanting, free the vote and end the filibuster. And for that, they're arrested? Excuse me, What? This almost sounds like opposite world. They were arrested for what? End the filibuster, free the vote. Unreal. Joyce Beatty just tweeted, hashtag good trouble. Hallie Talbot tweeted, Congresswoman Rep Beatty was detained moments ago protesting in Hart, the Hart Senate office building, urging the passage of H.R. 1 and an end to the filibuster. You ever feel like up is down and in is out? I'm not shocked because nothing shocks me anymore. But this is just flat out wrong. You have these crazy insurrectionists who, you know, go in, erect a noose, a gallows outside of the Capitol, and go in and they're chanting "Hang Mike Pence," and they're going after Nancy Pelosi. Yet they're not arrested that day. They're allowed to just leave and go home. And Congresswoman Joyce Beatty is arrested and detained for protesting peacefully? Something's really, really wrong. Like, really, really wrong. Anyway, so that's going on. Let me tell you about some other things happening today. The infrastructure bills, you know, you don't need me to go through the whole process again, but there are two infrastructure bills. There's the so-called bipartisan bill. That's the $600 billion one. That's the traditional infrastructure. That's the bridges, roads, and tunnels, I guess. There's some bipartisan support. Maybe they'll get, well, they need 10. They need 10 Republicans and every single Democrat to vote for it. But then there's the other one. There's the family infrastructure bill. This is the one that's going to be passed through reconciliation. Well, Chuck Schumer today announced that he wants to move both packages quickly. So he announced, now today's Thursday, right? He announced that he will file cloture on Monday on the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill. They're calling it BIF. And I think I'd have an easier time saying BIF than bipartisan because it's really not bipartisan. But BIF is the smaller, the true traditional infrastructure. So he'll file cloture Monday on BIF, setting it up for a vote on Wednesday. And then he also set Wednesday as the deadline for Democrats to agree on the framework to move forward with the larger family infrastructure bill, the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. So I guess Republicans are a little freaked out over that. Well, sorry, this is what happens when you're not in charge anymore. The people in charge try to get things done because we need to get things done. Something else that got done. Oh, let me see if I can't find very quickly Sherrod Brown's tweet on this one, because I'm thrilled that my daughter is grown and that I'm an empty nester and she's out of the house. And I'm overly thrilled that I didn't have a kid in school during COVID and didn't have to deal with any of that, because I can't even imagine. But a couple hours ago, Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, tweeted out, "Parents, check your bank accounts today. There's a good chance you receive money from the new monthly child tax credit payments. Thanks to President Biden and Democrats in Congress, spread this far and wide." Yeah, see, this is it. This is the day that if you have children under 18, you will get some money deposited in your bank account in the form of child tax credits. Here it is. $300 per month for each child under six, $250 per month for those ages 6 to 17. I know a lot of parents, single and married, who could really use money like that. And I certainly could have used it when in the many, many years I was a single mom, I could have used some help, but no help was coming. Joe Biden delivered a speech today on this issue. And let me see, I can bring up this clip just so you get an idea of what this is about. So here we go. Take it away, Joe Biden. And who's calling me now? All right. No, I don't know who's calling me. They shouldn't be calling me now. Okay. So here's Joe Biden on this child tax credit. Go, Joe.
Way. This credit doesn't start to phase out until a couple is making $150,000.
Huh.
Or a single parent is making $112,000. It begins to phase out then. This is a middle class tax cut. When I decided I wanted this in the legislation, I referred to it in the way it really is. It's a middle class tax cut.
Uh-huh.
It's just like the wealthy get tax cuts for a lot of things.
It's too many
tax
things.
Cut for your children, having children.
Yeah. Okay.
And this can make it possible for a hardworking parent to say to his or her child, honey, you can get your new braces now.
Oh.
We can get your tutor to help you in that math class you're having trouble with. We can get you the sports equipment you need to sign up for your first team you're going to play on.
Right.
People have written to me to tell me they use the money to buy their kids new shoes, to send them to summer camp, to cover after school care when school starts up again. You know, and to give you a sense of how transformative this would be the largest ever one-year decrease in child poverty in the history of the United States of America, as we begin now. Historic reductions in child poverty among white, black, and Latinos in AAPI communities. It's not even close. The benefits will be felt for years. Studies have shown the tax relief that helps children, that's okay. Don't worry about it. It's okay to let them cry. Or her, whichever.
Whichever. Doesn't really matter. Them. Let them cry. So there's just a little clip of Joe Biden speaking today. Tax cuts for working families. That is a good way to position it. Just like, as he said, just like the Republicans gave tax cuts to the wealthiest among us, we're helping the people who really need the help. And in this case, parents. And so every child, the parents of every child, citizens, parents of every child, under six gets $300 a month, and over six until 17 gets $250 a month. I think that's great. I would like that, but you know what? I don't fit the criteria anymore. So, oh well, I'm glad the people who are, you know, struggling with kids right now are going to get this. And that's the way we should look at it as Americans, isn't it? Not like, well, I didn't get anything. Why are they getting it? And that's sort of how the Republicans do it. Of course, today they're screaming, it's welfare. It's not welfare. It's assistance to people struggling today. So many of us are struggling. There, you know, speaking of struggling, I'll tell you who's struggling. Here's a little sort of a break from the serious stuff for a moment. Somebody who's struggling is the former guy, right? You know, Donald Trump, his company, the Trump Organization, is under indictment for tax problems, tax issues, and you know that Donald Trump, well, Midas Touch put together a little compilation of Trump explaining how he is, like, knows more than anybody anywhere about, you know, taxes and the tax code. So just to refresh your memory, there's a reason I'm playing this. You'll get it in a moment. Here is the orange former guy bragging about what he knows better than anyone else.
I know how the tax code works better than anyone.
Nobody knows the tax code better than I do, okay? I know it better. I'm the king of the tax code.
I'm the king of the tax code.
I know more formulas. I know more about tax abatements. I know more about taxes than any human being that God ever created.
I knew how to use the tax code to rebuild my company when others didn't have a clue.
You work very hard to pay the least amount of taxes.
Yeah, I want to pay the least amount possible. I don't want to pay tax.
He didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid,
see, I understand the tax code better than anybody that's ever run for president.
Former President Donald Trump's company, along with the organization's longtime chief financial officer, have been indicted on charges which involve tax-related crimes.
You used an apartment because you need an apartment. Because you have to travel too far where your house says you didn't pay tax.
$1.7 million over 16 years. Not much.
Yeah, it is much.
Education for your grandchildren.
Paid for his grandkids' private school in New York City. My dad did that because he's a good guy.
No, well, not because he's a good guy. This was compensation.
I don't even know. Do you have to? But does anybody know the answer to that stuff?
I know how the tax code works better than anyone.
They indict people for that.
Case closed. Indict Trump. That's a Midas Touch ad, right? So they put that out to remind us of all the things he said about how, you know, he is the king. What was it? The king of taxes. I'm the king of taxes. Well, Mr. King of Taxes, our friend Lauren Mayer has a song for you. I think we need to hear it now. Just waiting for the computer to catch up. Here we go. All right. Take it away, Lauren Mayer. It's coming.
Failure to pay payroll tax and then covering up the tracks. It's a crime when you try to blitz paying on fringe benefits after years of Trump telling us he's a tax genius. He can't claim innocence by no means. King of the tax code, it was more than a company car. This whole scheme ran pretty far. Big apartments, expensive schools. It all broke a ton of rules. And if you'd rather not do time, don't keep spreadsheets of your crime or brag you've got brains beyond brains. King of the tax code. Leona Helmsley used to say, only little people pay. Trump said she deserved her prison cell. Well, that hasn't aged so well. Now his business is on the skids.
Uh-huh.
Wonder if they'll flip his kids.
Oh, come on.
They each deserve what's coming to them.
Oh, yeah.
As things implode, Trump'll claim he barely knew them. Oy, what a toad. Like Al Capone, tax fraud's what will undo them. King of the tax code.
King of the tax code. Lauren Mayer. Find her on everywhere, on the YouTubes and the Facebooks and the Twitters and all that. She's so good. The king of the tax code. Patreon.com/Lauren Mayer. King of the tax code. All right. I see our friend listener Tamara from Missouri is calling in. Hey, Tamara, what's up?
Hey, Nicole. As a 64-year-old woman,
yeah,
who raised a 2-year-old and an 8-year-old under Reagan.
Oh, God.
No kidding. I am telling the women, the young women today with little kids, go for it.
Yes.
You take that extra money and you get your kids in Little League. You get them in baseball. You get them in softball. You get them in bowling tournaments. You buy them them shoes. You get them them jeans and t-shirts and school books. You do what you need to do to take care of your kids, and you can get out from underneath some worthless man that you have had to live with,
yeah,
that beat your
ooh,
kids,
ooh,
and get out. You take that money and you,
well,
run.
Let me just say,
you
if someone's
now
beating you, then get the fuck out regardless of the money. Get out. You know, call for help.
But
get out.
But a lot of women, Nicole.
I know, don't.
They're stuck.
I know.
I never got stuck. I skinned palm trees with a carpet knife to feed my kids. I climbed 125-foot palm trees,
uh-huh,
in Arizona to feed my kids,
yeah,
under,
yeah,
the table because I didn't get child support because back then they told you good luck getting it.
Right.
I want these young women to know you take that money and you run.
Right.
because I've lived among poor women my whole life. I'm still poor.
Yeah, well, I've seen them.
I've seen them living under abusive men because they have no other choice.
Oh, I get you. Hey, Tamara, I'm going to run, but great comments. I appreciate the call. Stay safe there in St. Louis.
You go, girl.
You go, girl. You too. Thanks, Tamara. Bye-bye. In case you don't know, it's okay to call in. Like during the first half hour of the show, I usually do not have a guest, and the phone lines are open. I mean, I'm running through stuff and playing videos and telling you what's happening in the news. Yeah, so feel free to call in. 954-889-6410 is the number. You can also Skype in if you're on Skype. I'm simply Nicole Sandler. But, you know, in the meantime, I'll tell you about other things. The other big story today, you know, there's these three books that have all dropped right around the same time. I know the one from Michael Bender, the Wall Street Journal reporter, Frankly, We Did Win or something like that. That one was released on Tuesday, 2 days ago. Next Tuesday is the Carol Lenig and, the other guy from the Washington Post, Phil Rucker, who used another line, another famous, infamous Trump quote for the title of their book. And then Michael Wolff has yet another one, all coming out at the same time, and they're all filled with these horrific stories. The big story today from Lenig and Rucker is on the front page, I believe, of the Washington Post, their excerpt, because they're Washington Post reporters, so they get their book excerpted in the Post. But today, it goes into detail about the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Milley, and his fear of a Trump coup, right? Greg Sargent just tweeted out, "The real takeaway from Milley's fear of a Trump coup is that we should not rely on the virtue of individual actors next time. Instead, we need reforms to certification in the Electoral College Count Act and suspension of the filibuster to pass them." So that's what Greg Sargent wrote about in his Plumline blog today at The Washington Post. But, you know, this is really important. So there's a whole lot of that. And Donald Trump, of course, because he just can't help himself, he apparently put out a statement, "If I were going to attempt a coup," you know, basically debunking what the common knowledge is about how he behaved on that day. So if I were to attempt a coup, I believe was trending on Twitter, at least for a while. It's a crazy world, you know? So the other thing that's happening today, and I find this rather curious, this is just sort of tidbits. This is just a little bit of everything while we, you know, before we get Howie on the line. Angela Merkel is in D.C. today. She I think, had breakfast at the vice president's residence with Kamala Harris and Doug Emhoff. She is, do I have it here? Yes, so she's doing that. She's making the rounds today, right? And tonight she's having dinner, right? A dinner tonight at the White House. Kevin McCarthy is invited, which is okay. He's the Republican. He's the House Minority Leader, so McCarthy's going to be there. Biden and Harris and Angela Merkel will be there. And there's one more person on the list. Wait a minute. McCarthy. Okay, so do you know who the other person on the list is? I was thinking, okay, it's probably Mitch McConnell, right? And maybe Nancy Pelosi or something. Hillary Clinton. Really? McCarthy, just so you know, he had some meeting this morning. Then he flew down, or he flew to New Jersey. I say down here because I forget. Donald Winters at Bedminster, not at Mar-a-Lago. So House Minority Leader, the man who wants to be Speaker, he's probably on his way back to D.C. now, but he flew to meet with the orange idiot in Bedminster today, I guess to get his talking points. And then he's coming back tonight to attend a dinner with Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Angela Merkel, and Mitch McConnell, and Hillary Clinton. What? So where's Chucky Schmucky and Nancy Pelosi? What? Summer's in Bedminster. Yeah. Oh, Summer's. Did I say winter? I so need a weekend. Yes. So it's let's see. It's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. So he's spending his summer. He's summering in Bedminster, wintering in Mar-a-Lago. Just sometimes my brain doesn't work. And I could really use a weekend. Anyway, Hillary Clinton, what? I don't know. And so Environmental Coffee House in the chat room is asking, is Hillary friends with Angela? Well, maybe, because she was Secretary of State. So maybe there's a relationship there. But I don't get it. So Biden is having McCarthy and McConnell there. What about Pelosi and Schumer? I get that he wants to play this bipartisan game, but really? Yeah. And I'm seeing other, like Adon in the chat room says, happy today for all the families. It is really good. Actually, if I can find this real, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place today. I did have a quote from Janet Yellen. She is the Secretary of the Treasury. First, there are two tweets they put out. First, the Treasury Department tweeted, today, roughly $15 billion start going out to families that include nearly 60 million eligible children in the first monthly payment of the increased and expanded child tax credit from the American Rescue Plan passed in March. And then Janet Yellen herself tweeted a follow-up, and she said, for the first time in our nation's history, American working families are receiving monthly tax relief payments to help pay for essentials. This major middle-class tax relief and step in reducing child poverty is a remarkable economic victory for America and also a moral one. This is important. I'm glad that they're stepping up and taking credit for this, because that's something that the Democrats don't do well. And I understand that, because I don't do it well either. I don't toot my own horn very well. I don't get on and say, hey, we're doing great. I don't. But it's more important for the Democrats to do it for sure, because, because the Republicans lie about everything and they try to swoop in and take credit, as they are for the money going back to each state in the various relief plans that have passed under Joe Biden, things that they didn't participate in at all. What? Oh, this is interesting. Jennifer Bendery just tweeted out, shockingly, Texas Democratic lawmakers who left the state en masse to stop a voter suppression bill from passing and plan to stay out of the state until August, until the special session ends, are not interested in Republicans' offer to take a plane back on Sunday. Just in case you were wondering. Yeah. So there's a bunch of things to talk to Howie Klein about today. And I've got a lot of stories here, but I always, in the Thursday mornings, I shoot him an email and say, is there anything in particular that you would like to hit on today? And today he came back with two big stories, one of which has to do with who will succeed Nancy Pelosi as speaker. And how is this person trying to shore up support? That's one. The other is about it's about a Ryan Grimm story at The Intercept. The headline reads, closed door progressive caucus antitrust meeting turns fiery amid industry influence allegations. So, there's stuff going on. Intra-party fighting. It's horrible. I wish they would just, for once, get their shit together on behalf of the American people. That would be nice. And one last thing before I get, we'll take a quick break, but before I get Howie on the line, is to ask why, Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, was arrested today for a harmless, peaceful protest in favor of voting rights around the Capitol. She and nine other black women were chanting. For that, they're arrested, right? And Matt Gaetz is still walking around free, allowed to sit on committees and question, high ranking officials, people that he shouldn't even be in the same room with because he's just so god awful. Well, I don't have time to play this. I'll tell you what, stick around, because at the end of the show, I have a song for Matt Gaetz. Oh, it's one of those days. You'd think it was Friday if you didn't know any better, because I'm so discombobulated and I usually lose my shit by, you know, Friday afternoon, but today's only Thursday. Go figure. Anyway, let's get Howie on the line. So whose job is it to mix up the Dirty Debbies today? Anyone? Bueller?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Except Howie Klein has not picked up the phone yet. Let's try dialing again. I have a feeling he'll probably say, oh, I was on the phone with, you know, Alan Grayson or somebody. Howie? No. And now it's not, it doesn't even look like it's even ringing right now. What the hell is going on? This might be, you know, this just might be a gremlin thing. Mercury's not in retrograde right now. All right, let me try it again. I'm having one of those days. I didn't even know I was having one of those days until we came on the air. All right, let's try it again. All right, let's call Howie Klein. Okay, now I know it's ringing. All right, let's see if he picks up. One ringy dingy. Ah, there he goes. Hello.
I was able to hear you. You didn't hear me.
I didn't hear you. No, there was something funky on this end. So good. I'm glad you're here. Hi, how are you?
I am. I'm good. I'm suffering from a dilemma.
What's that?
And I'm maybe like people in your chat room could help.
Okay.
So, you know, everybody knows that in recent days, Maddow has been talking about, and she's not the only one, a lot of the media is talking about bringing these Afghans who were served as interpreters and other jobs who worked for the Americans while the U.S. was occupying Afghanistan.
Yes, absolutely.
And bringing them to the United States.
Or bringing
and,
them, you know, getting them the hell out of there.
Congress people, most of them conservative Congress people, both Democrats and Republicans, are, you know, chomping at the bit about this. You know, we've got to rescue our allies, et cetera, et cetera. So I was thinking about it, you know, and I lived in Afghanistan a couple of times when I was much younger. And my overall experience of the Afghans who I met were that they were really noble and wonderful people. A family sheltered me for a whole winter when I hurt my leg up in the Hindu Kush by falling off a horse. So I have a really good experience of these Afghans. But we're talking about people, like, think of it like this. Before the Americans invaded and occupied Afghanistan, there was a brief moment of independence. But before that, the Russians had invaded.
Yes.
And while the Russians were occupying the country, there were certain Afghans who worked for the Russians. They were interpreters, they were cooks, they were whatever they were, they worked for them. And what do you think about an Afghan who worked for the Russian occupiers? And is it fair to say that Afghans who worked for the American occupiers are the same in some ways, character-wise? Can you make the same kind of generalizations? I'm thinking we're about to bring maybe 50, 60,000 people, because it's not just the 20,000 who work for the U.S., but it's also their families.
Right.
We're about to bring them to this country. And I'm sure someone's going to teach them how to use toilet paper and all that kind of stuff. That's just a matter of time before they, you know, learn how to be Americans. But I'm just worried. I just think they were kind of traitors to their country.
Yeah, they're not necessarily Talking about bringing them here. They're saying bring them to Guam, bring them to a territory where they can acclimate and go through all the paperwork and wait and do what they need to do to get out of there because they're in danger. Now, if they were traitorous to the
wonderful idea, I love that idea.
Right,
but I mean, bringing them to Guam
or another territory,
or Kazakhstan, yes. That's all great, but that's just a way station before they bring them here.
And not everyone's going to get to come here. I would think they'd have to go through the screening that anybody would have to go through before they come to this country. There is a screening procedure.
What are they going to have, like some farmer from Iowa screen them?
No, there's got to be. There's a procedure when these are refugees. These are wartime refugees. That's who they would be. They would be people escaping a horrific situation. These are the people who helped the Americans while we were there, and the Taliban will likely kill and first torture horribly before they kill them if they stay behind.
Yes.
Doesn't mean they can necessarily come to the U.S., but get them the fuck out of
that's
there.
A good way to look at it.
Yeah.
They are refugees,
yeah.
And they would be killed.
Yes.
I mean, the Taliban are already killing people. And yeah, so that lens is very helpful. Because when you look at it that way, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've been watching Maddow every day, you know, talking it up in a different way, not really talking about them the way you just did as refugees, but more as like heroic people who helped the Americans. And you know, when I thought about that a little bit, I was thinking, yeah, but they were people who helped the occupiers.
Right.
Is who they were.
Right.
Well,
but we were allegedly working with
occupying the occupying armies going into other countries.
Right.
Who helps them?
Right.
Who helped the occupiers in France? Who, when Germany invaded France, who were the people who helped them? Who were the what kind of character do these people?
Yeah, but
have?
Howie, but
and
I think
no
you're
one,
you've
not
got
the
it.
Same. You can't paint them with a broad brush, but some of them may not have been the kind of the noble. Wonderful, fabulous, generous people like the Afghans that I met in the Hindu Kush who saved my life.
Right. But remember, we were working with the official Afghan government. These were people who were allegedly, Karzai or whoever, as there was an official Afghan government, we weren't fighting the government. Allegedly, we're fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban.
In 1999, when I first got to Kandahar, which isn't that far, you could take a long taxi drive. You can take a taxi from Kandahar to Kabul. And in Kandahar, the second biggest city, when you talk about Afghanistan, they laugh in your face. There was no concept of Afghanistan. That's the king of Kabul.
Right. So then there is no government for them to be disloyal to, Howie.
Afghanistan is a made-up thing.
Right. Okay.
There was no national identity, at least in 1969. Maybe there was one eventually. I don't think so.
Well, as much as they tried to say there was one, look, they call, and it was after 69 that Russia went to the Soviet Union, and that the Soviet Union ended. It broke them. That's why they call Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires. We would have gone broke had we stayed. I mean, we did. It broke us. We shouldn't have been there. Bin Laden got exactly what he wanted. He wanted this nation broken, and this nation was broken after that attack, and mostly because of what we did. Not because of what he did. And so I don't look at those people who helped the Americans as traitors to their country. As you just said, Howie, there really was no country. And they were ostensibly working against Al-Qaeda back then, and then ISIS, and then the Taliban, or whatever combination of the three.
Maybe.
Well.
Or maybe they just wanted the money.
Well, there's that. Look, I'm sure we paid decent money for these people to be to help the Americans there. So whatever. I firmly believe we need to get them out. If they helped us, we need to get them the hell out of there.
We need to get them out. I agree with that completely, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about bringing them into America.
I don't think they're talking about them.
And maybe that's the thing we need to do. I'm not saying it's not.
Right.
I'm just asking for help to understand. That's all.
Refugees.
I've been wrestling with this for a couple of days now, and now I'm trying to write about it, And every time I start writing about it, I'm not happy with where I go.
Gotcha. Well,
you were helpful when you brought up the
refugee
lens, yeah. Which I should have thought of myself. That really, you know, that because it could be the end of the story is right there.
Yeah.
The refugee
I think it is.
Lens is all there is to it, and
I
that's
think
the
it
end
is.
Of the story.
Yeah.
But I just keep getting images. You know, what would you say about the people who helped the Russians? Are they different from the people that helped the Americans?
No. Well, the Russians should have taken care of them. And frankly, I don't give a shit what the Russians do at this point, as long as they leave us alone.
Yeah, but it's not about the Russians. It's about the Afghans.
Right.
About Afghans.
Well, then the Afghans, when they pulled out of Afghanistan, the Russians should have taken care of them.
Country to work for the Americans. Or think about, you know, like I said, who were the French people that worked for the Germans, and what happened to them after the Germans certainly didn't have any way to take them to save them, needless to say. And I mean, everyone knows what happened to them. Some may have been executed. Women who were sleeping with German officers had their heads shaved.
Oh,
for
God.
Example.
Oh my God.
There are people who went to prison who committed serious crimes, but there was a lot of bad feelings after World War II. I don't know. I mean, it's a mixed thing. Everybody has their own motives. But, you know, the refugee thing is a good way to think
yep.
of it because it sort of puts it to rest in a way.
I think so. So, hey, Howie, did you hear what happened today inside the Hart Senate office building?
No.
Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, who is now the new chair of the Congressional Black Caucus.
I know her.
Do you?
She was the one who never got arrested for being the worst shill in Congress for the payday lending.
Well, she was arrested
lenders.
Today.
She never went to jail.
Well,
I always wondered, why isn't this woman in jail?
Okay. Well, today she's arrested. She was arrested for she and nine other black women, I think all in Congress, but I could be wrong on that front, were protesting. They were chanting, you know, kill the filibuster. They were chanting free the vote. And for that, the Capitol Police pulled out their zip ties, put her hands behind her back and arrested her.
And did they sort of set that up in advance and have the cameraman there so she would be able to run for higher office with that picture?
I don't know. Now, they
she's
were
one,
walking
she's
around.
One of the most corrupt members
is she?
Of Congress.
Wow.
She was when she was in the state legislature,
wow.
She was so corrupt that people's jaw would drop to the floor because of her corruption. Her husband also is not a public official, but her bag man and beyond hideous in every way possible. You know, and you know, from the beginning, it was like always like, why is this woman not in prison? Why is she not in prison?
Wow.
She blatantly takes bribes. So now she made a wonderful little campaign commercial of her being arrested to fight for civil rights or something,
right.
Whatever she got arrested for.
Protesting for voting rights.
Maybe she's had a change of heart and she really believes in all of it and she's a wonderful, fabulous person, even though she was the first member of Congress to try to stab Nita Turner in the back.
Really? Oh, she's from Ohio,
oh,
no, of course.
She was way before, what's his name, the phony civil rights guy from South Carolina. I can't remember his name. Clyburn.
She
was way before Clyburn. It was Joyce Beatty. It was the first one to, you know, it was basically anybody but Tina Turner. It scares the hell out of her to have someone like Tina Turner because she had a progressive who ran against her last time. A beautiful, wonderful, young African-American woman who I probably introduced you to. Maybe not, but I should have if I didn't. And
what's her
and
name?
That's the last thing in the world that a corrupt old monster like Joyce Beatty wants.
What was the name of her challenger?
I didn't mean to say she's a corrupt old monster. How do I know? Maybe she's changed and she's fabulous.
Yeah, you know, I doubt it. But the reason that I brought it up was we saw, you know, hundreds of revolutionary insurrectionists in the Capitol doing more than protesting and chanting a few things, and none of them got their hands tied with the zip ties and, you know, arrested. So I was just
right, but
that.
Probably Beatty like made that you know, got the agreement that she would be zip tied and arrested for the cameras. I don't know that for sure, but I'm just guessing. My own experience of being arrested in that sort of a situation was that exactly. Although I didn't make any deal, I just wanted to be arrested. But the leaders of this giant demonstration in 1967, I think, The leaders had made, there were tens of thousands of people there, and the agreement was going to be that the 10 leaders would be arrested. And it would be a symbolic thing, and then everybody would disperse and go home. And I was thinking, I didn't come all the way here from Stony Brook for an hour and a half to disperse and go home. I'm being arrested. I'm here to be arrested. So I sort of snuck in and claimed I was, do you remember Benjamin Spock? Do you know who that is?
The baby doctor?
Yes, Benjamin Spock was the baby doctor.
Spock,
exactly.
Right.
Good. Mm-hmm. Every woman in America raised their babies at that time,
right,
based on his book.
Yep.
But he was also a leader of the anti-war in Vietnam movement, and he was one of the leaders of this giant demonstration. And I attached myself to him when he was going under the barricade, and they said, "Where the hell do you think you're going?" And I said, "I'm his aide." I had never met him before. I said, "I'm his aide, and look how old he is. He could die. It's going to be your fault if he dies. You can't not let me in." And the cop looked at Spock, and Spock shook his head yes, and I wound up in a jail cell with Allen Ginsberg and the Thugs and Spock, all these celebrities of the anti-war movement, which was fabulous for
how
me.
Cool.
But they had all made the agreement, that they would go to jail, it was going to be on TV, it would be in all the newspapers, which it was, and that was that part of the demonstration.
Wow.
And my guess is that Beatty made that same.
Oh, probably. Well, she did say something about that she hopes she gets arrested. So there you go. Let's change the subject. Something that just popped up on my screen, you'll probably be happy about. It probably won't affect you personally. Mask mandates are returning to L.A. County due to an alarming increase in COVID cases. Masks will be required indoors regardless of your vaccination status.
Yeah, well, I wear them anyway.
Right, that's what I figured.
Not wearing.
And here
it's
in
funny.
Florida are, of course, with idiot death sentence, there were over like 6,000 new cases yesterday. So Florida is exploding, and yet the media and these idiot pundits are touting death sentence as the next great thing, and certainly the 2024 Republican nominee if Trump doesn't run again.
Yep. Trump won't run again, but I don't think. But who knows? What do I know?
Who knows?
Anyway, in California, just today I was looking at my N99. I've been wearing an N95, which is very relaxing, and I'm looking at the N99. I'm thinking, do I have to start wearing this thing again?
I didn't even know there was an N99. I thought that the N95 was the highest.
There's an N99 that's higher, but they're expensive and hard to find, and people don't wear them because an N95 doesn't cost anything, an N99 does.
Right.
So and what about my gloves? Do I start wearing gloves now as well?
Or do I
stay in the house?
Just stay in the house.
That's another possibility.
Right. And we still don't go out much. I mean, occasionally we'll go out to dinner. And this Saturday, finally, we're going to the Van Gogh thing. Have you heard about these immersive Van Gogh exhibits?
No.
Oh, my God. They're everywhere. In fact, there are two different, like, competing ones in Miami right now. It's like a virtual reality whole room projection that you're inside Van Gogh's paintings. It looks really cool. So we're finally going this weekend. Yeah. Just Google, immersive Van Gogh. And I'm sure there's one in L.A. because they're everywhere. They're touring around the world.
Oh, how fantastic.
Yeah.
I could really see Van Gogh, being a big thing in Miami. I mean, just because there's a certain rococo-ness to both the city and his work.
Mm-hmm.
And he just seems like, Miami is a real art center.
When Art Basel is there.
That's art capital, right. Yes, for all of Latin America, as a matter of fact. So I could see why it would be a big thing there.
But it's not only here.
If it is, I want to check it out.
Yeah, you should definitely. I'll probably Google it while we're talking because I'm a multitasker. So, Howie, when I asked you this morning if there's anything you wanted to touch on, you sent me two articles. One of them was sort of about who's going to replace Nancy Pelosi as speaker, because hopefully this will be her last term. What are the odds on that? What are the odds that Pelosi retires?
The odds are good. She has promised that this is her last term.
Okay. All right. Well.
Now, it is possible she'll break her promise.
Yeah,
it could happen, but I don't think so.
Okay. So the article you sent me was from Axios, and the headline reads, Catherine Clark's Friend-Filled Path to Speaker. She seemed to have come out of, I was going to say left field, but more like right field. and into leadership. Where, what, who is she?
Well, she's a progressive.
Is she?
From Massachusetts.
Oh, yes, so Dunlap Field. Okay.
Good.
All right.
Now, the conventional wisdom is that the person who's going to get this is going to be Hakeem Jeffries, that Pelosi picked him to be her successor to keep Steny Hoyer out of the job.
Okay.
And it's about time we have a black person. And
that's true.
What he is. He's a very Hakeem Jeffries is a very, very, very ambitious young black guy.
Right.
Who doesn't, you know, this week I'm living by something that Alan Grayson said on a TV show, which was, we need to elect people not who want to be something, but people who want to do something. Well, Hakeem Jeffries is the opposite of that.
He wants to be something.
Right. He doesn't really stand for anything. He's a good speaker, but not really. He's not really a good speaker. He's actually a pretty bad speaker. But he's a hustler.
Yeah.
He knows how to say things occasionally that sound right. But he's really about himself. He's a careerist. When he was in the state legislature in New York, he was a hustling careerist, and that's what he is now. And he's got himself into, I think it's the number 5 position in the Democratic hierarchy, and the number 4 position is Catherine Clark.
Uh-huh.
So she's got a different ballywick. Like his is like he's a black guy, he's a phony progressive in the progressive caucus,
right.
but you know he's not really a progressive. He says the things that you have to say to vaguely be a progressive, but it's not what he is. And he now that he wants to be speaker, he has put out, you know, really strong feelers to the Republican wing of the Democratic Party, to the New Dems and the Blue Dogs, and he's pals with them, and he just started an anti-progressive pack to help right-wing incumbents
Seriously?
Be off progressive. So that's what Hakeem Jeffries is known for now. So he I would say he's really, really bad. Plus, I've always thought of Hakeem Jeffries, and I have an illustration of it up on my blog that just went up a little while ago, an hour ago or something, that shows him as he's the Democratic version of Kevin McCarthy. Two empty suits.
Oh, the Jeffries empty suit.
Empty suits.
Right.
If you go to my blog, you'll see a wonderful, right on the top, you'll see a wonderful piece of art that my art director did this morning. And as soon as he did it, I had to get it right up.
Right. I put it up on the screen now. So anybody watching one of the video streams is seeing it. It's an empty suit with no head. It says Hakeem Jeffries empty suit. So it's showing right now.
And then after that, it says Kevin McCarthy empty suit, right?
Kevin McCarthy empty suit. Yep. It alternates between the two. Yeah.
So, because they're really very, very similar. I mean, obviously, there were some differences. Hakeem Jeffries backs choice for women, and Kevin McCarthy is against choice for women. You know, so the things that signify their teams, each one of them has that. So they're different in that way. But in terms of character and the kind of people that they are and the kind of leadership that they're offering or not offering, they're the same. Hakeem Jeffries and Kevin McCarthy are two of the same. So anyway, and then Catherine Clark is actually kind of a progressive.
Huh.
You know, I don't know her personally. I've never met her. And when she first ran, she ran against someone who was definitely to the left of her, and she beat that person. But she has a good voting record, and I have no reason to believe that she isn't for real. I spoke to a number of members of Congress today. Only one of them would even allow me to use their quote anonymously.
Really?
The rest of them wouldn't even let me use what they had to say anonymously. They just didn't want to say it. But, you know, she's, you know, the point that everyone was making is that she's just too friendly. She doesn't have what it takes. Or the one guy who did let me use it said that she would be a lot like Paul Ryan, who just got stepped on. He was like, you know, everybody just stepped all over Paul Ryan. He was so nice. When I say everybody, I mean all the Republicans stepped all over him. And he didn't last. And that they said this, she would be the same. She doesn't have, you know, she's just really nice. That's her thing. She's just nice. Everyone likes her. She has lots of friends. Although when I was looking at the list of her friends, which she defined by saying, these are my roommates and my best friends, they were horrible. I mean, Cherry Bustos.
Oh, God.
I mean, they were all terrible. The best of them was Lois Frankel.
Oh, God. I know her from here. She's, yes.
She's one of the worst members of Congress, but
she's far from the best. No, she's not. She's just a district or two over from me, and she is.
I mean, the six women that she talked about as her best friends, Lois Frankel was kind of the best of the lot. The rest of them were just terrible. I mean, really bad, you know, blue dogs, new Dems. And I'm thinking, what kind of judgment does this woman have? But, you know, better than Hakeem Jeffries? Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
But the other part of that article, which in some ways was more of the moment, was a thing about corruption, and it's more important in some ways. And that is the story of a meeting that took place on Tuesday at the Progressive Caucus.
Oh, yes.
Members of the Progressive Caucus have told me that the report that I read, I think it was in maybe in Politico, I'm not sure.
No, what you sent me was from The Intercept. It was a Ryan Grimm story from The Intercept.
And Grimm writing for The Intercept, and they told me that, well, Grimm got, you know, is exaggerating, he doesn't have it right. You know what? I kind of believe Grimm.
I believe Grimm too.
Members of Congress are telling me that Grimm is exaggerating. I actually believe Grimm on
this. So do I.
And basically what it was, because I reported on this a few weeks ago, that among the people who were trying to stop the antitrust bills, there are three antitrust bills that were written largely by Pramila Jayapal and David Cicilline, who are very active in the Progressive Caucus,
yep.
and very important in the antitrust movement.
Right.
They wrote these. They were in part of running these six bills that passed the committee and are now going to the full House. Well, the person, there are a few people, but one of the people who really, really stridently against it and really making a big scene out of it, and made it a big scene at the Progressive Caucus, where she's a member, is
Zoe Lofgren.
Zoe Lofgren, right. So old Zoe Lofgren, who's in her 70s and has a no intention of retiring and is just like a Nancy Pelosi puppet.
Right.
And who's in a D plus 23 district. Now, I mean, in other words, no one could beat her. I mean,
right.
She's in a district where you don't have to think about Republicans, but there's no Democrat who's running against her.
Right.
And she's really not very good. She's got a B rating from Progressive Punch. Somebody in a D plus 23 district, if they don't have an A plus rating, there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And she's not wonderful. In any case, she actually talked about something that is never talked about publicly. We owe her something. She's talked about all the bribes that she's taken, millions and millions of dollars worth of bribes from big tech.
Uh-huh.
And now
she's got to do their bidding.
Trust bills,
right?
Are going against her financiers. And she says, she's saying to the people in the caucus, literally, this is what she said. I haven't had to use any of the campaign money that I've gotten from big tech since 1996.
Oh.
I've never had it
touched
because I don't have any competition.
So I send it to others.
You people. I've handed it out to other members who needed it. And now you're paying me back by passing this antitrust legislation against these people?
Right.
And so self-conscious, so unself-conscious, and so so sure of herself that she didn't even realize what she was saying. She didn't realize that she was admitting to taking bribes.
Yeah. Wow. She said the quiet part out loud.
Told, when she was first elected, which was in the same year that Newt Gingrich took over Congress in 1994.
Yeah.
She was kind of an idealistic liberal person. She was for real. But being in Congress all these decades since then, and that's why I call the story something about the sausage factory, has changed her.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she's not any good anymore. She shouldn't be in Congress anymore.
And yet Pelosi put her on the January 6th committee. Go figure. I don't get it.
She tried to be the chairman. She had a huge fight with Jerry Nadler.
Oh.
It was nip and tuck for a while there of who was going to wind up as the chair.
Really? Wow. Benny Thompson. Real. I mean, I'm glad Jamie Raskin and Adam Schiff are on the committee, because the rest of them I can't think of anyone offhand that I'm really impressed with. But at least those two are there. So I know at least they'll take care of business.
Yeah, well, Raskin for sure. I mean, you can count on him.
Oh, he's great. All right, Howie, we are out of time. This time flew by. So until next week, I will talk to you then.
Thanks. And thanks for the help with Afghanistan.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, and by the way, I just sent you, I tweeted to you. I did indeed look it up while we were talking, in case you were wondering. And there's one Van Gogh exhibit already open at the site of the old Amoeba Music. They're using that building.
My hood.
Yes. So there's one there now. And then there's another one opening at the end of July. So just like here, where we have two different ones, there are going to be two there. But I tweeted you the link to an LA Magazine story about it. So it's very cool. You should check it out.
Tonight, I'm going to meet Shervin Azami. You have to pass right by there.
Oh, how funny.
And we're having dinner, and either I'll go in there on the way or I'll go in there on the way
Well,
home.
You might not be able to. You might, because you have to buy tickets in advance. But check it out, definitely. Find out about it.
Okay.
And we're going Saturday, so we'll talk about it next week.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Howie Klein. Bye.
Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Okay, bye. So there's Howie, everybody. All right. I promised you if you'd stay till the end, I had another song parody for you. So I'll play this one. It is, when I started to set it up before and I realized how late it was, I'm having one of those days. The setup I was doing was, all these people have been booted out of Congress, usually on the left, right? Al Franken's not there. He should be. Who else? One little scandal for a Democrat and they're out. But Republicans like Matt Gaetz are still walking around. So this is from Don Caron and the Parody Project. It's called The Year They Got Matt. So I'll leave you with this one today. It's a lovely song. You can even sing along, although I don't think they print the lyrics on this one. But you'll recognize the tune, I think, The Year They Got Matt. Take it away, Don Caron, and I'll see you tomorrow. Lots of clips, news clips, showing up about Matt Gaetz getting away with murder.
On a morning from his desk in Congress, using keystrokes that will prove he's slime. He went prowling on the web like Jeffrey Epstein, perpetrating a crime. He came out overdone with his big mouth run and claiming innocence he could not feign, and offered up some explanations, but they all seemed inane. In the year they got mad, the feds will ask him lots of questions, do his answers lock up with theirs? Then his life will take a turn, but which direction? Bravado disappears. When his defense stalls and he puts up walls, but the evidence still sticks like glue. Those days you'll say, I see my life just like a nightmare coming true. The year they got mad. speaks to him sharply as his eyes fill like dark tides in the sea. He'll come with handcuffs which hold firmly as they take him to find what's waiting inside. The year they got mad.
Screen here, it just says moody guitar solo. If I were them, I would have edited out the instrumental part of the song, but they didn't. So we get a long instrumental break here, which is really not the best way to do a song parody, because, and again, there's not even anything funny on the screen. Now it says piano and guitar duet. So I'd fill in the dead air, so to speak. By the way, this is The Parody Project, and you can find them on YouTube. It's a parody of an Al Stewart song, The Year of the Cat, for those of you too young to remember. The screen kindly tells us that this is an alto sax solo, in case you were wondering. Again, I would have cut out the instrumental part, but nobody else knew.
Each morning comes and he's still in there, all his freedoms and dignity gone. 'Cause they stripped away his rights and punched his ticket, so he has to stay on. While the sordid stains of his life remain in the rhythm of the day-to-day, he prays someday unbound he'll leave there, but that's not for him to say. In the year they got mad. Got mad.